With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
Welcome to Scuderia F1, the podcast that's always up to speed with the latest Formula One news. Follow us on Twitter at Scuderia F1 Pod and subscribe to the show on iTunes and Stitcher. Now, here are your hosts, Mark Daly and Kevin Laramie.
Hey everybody, what is up? Welcome to the podcast that is always up to speed with Formula One here on the Overtime Media Network. Mark Daly here. Welcome you back to the show this week. It's Friday, it's weekend, and I hope wherever you are, it's a nice day. It's been gloomy and dark and raining and wet. It's February here on the west coast of Canada, so pretty much par for the course, although we had a little bit of snow earlier this week, which we can get here from time to time, so, you know, whatever. It is what it is. But you know what? I'm excited. I literally lost track of time. I was looking around, just making the notes for the show this week, and then I finally realized that the car launches and winter testing is literally just a couple of days away from now. And we're going to talk about Haas launching some pictures of their car. Williams is going to do a digital-only release of their car, which is a little bit on Formula One, but whatever. We'll talk about that too. But I still have it in my mind. I think I must be living back at the beginning of January around New Year's, because I still have it somewhere inside my skull that the car launches and winter testing is still some far off day in the future, but it's not. So that's actually pretty exciting. So with winter testing scheduled to get going in just over a week's time, then there's actually not all that much time before the season actually starts. There'll be a little bit of a break between the end of testing and the start of the season, of course. But the good news is that the light at the end of the tunnel, it may not be in full effect in this big, huge ball of glowing light at the end of the tunnel, but it's a speck. It's there. There's some hope that we definitely have the darkest, deepest part of the off season behind us. And it's been pretty busy, don't you think, in terms of off season? I mean, there's been some pretty big news, obviously, with Charles and Max Verstappen signing new contracts, all the, well, rumors, fake news, whatever you want to call it, about Lewis potentially going to Ferrari, which I still think I just can't see it happening. But I don't think we need to go back into that one this week. But it's been a fairly eventful off season. So to finally get back to looking at what's going to happen on the track in just over a week's time is actually really, really exciting. Then, of course, we do have the season coming up on the 12th of March is going to be the very first practice session in Melbourne. So just over a month from now, 34 days counting today, and 15th of March, the Sunday, is when we all get going for serious for the 2020 World Championship. And well, I'm sure just like the rest of you, I can't wait. But like I say, the longest part of the winter is behind us, and we're about to get back to the serious stuff and the fun stuff, and I just can't wait. Anyways, I'm going to start off the show this week and kind of pick up, not necessarily where we left off, but definitely touch on something that we talked about last week, because when I had sat down to record, I usually record on Thursday evenings here on the West Coast. So, you know, for those of you that might not be completely familiar with the geography of this part of the world, so we are, well, a long ways behind Europe, and there's not really all that much left until you hit the international date line and then head over to the Far East and start all over again. I mean, it's 18 hours difference between here and Japan, for example. So usually we kind of, time makes it a little bit different or difficult to record these things. So I sat down on Thursday, and when it gets released, it's Friday morning or Friday afternoon, depending wherever you are in the world. But I just been looking at all the news or the stories about Lawrence Stroll and his consortium making, reportedly a $200 million bid to get a controlling stake, or maybe not controlling stake, but definitely a stake in Aston Martin. So that actually did come to pass almost 168 hours or 1 week ago. And Racing Point, which is, I always thought, a bit of a strange kind of name. I sort of jokingly refer to them off air as "What's the Point?" because, well, like I say, it's a name that doesn't really mean anything. It's always a bit of a bizarre one. But part of the deal is now that Stroll and his consortium have ended up with a 16.7% stake in the company, which they secured for the tidy sum of £182 million. And, well, Aston Martin is going to be in Formula One for the start of the 2021 World Championship, which is a part of the new investment deal between the manufacturer and Lawrence Stroll. And that is a bit of a mind blower. We had to look at the amount of money that's being thrown out there. And it's fascinating, too. I mean, Lawrence, obviously, a very, very successful businessman, and rightfully so. I mean, he's got a lot of money, but it's interesting to see that he's going even further than just buying a stake or buying the control of Racing Point, but has actually gone even further to bring Aston Martin into Formula One. I mean, they've been as a sponsor for Red Bull for the past couple of years, but that's going to come to an end for 2021 as well. But the documents that were released sort of detail what they're calling an enhanced F1 involvement for Aston Martin, which is being viewed as essential. But anyways, the documents part of this whole deal had to say, quote, Aston Martin Lagonda has entered into a legally binding term sheet under which the Racing Point F1 team will become the Aston Martin F1 works team with effect from the 2021 season. This agreement has a 10-year initial term, and Aston Martin Lagonda will receive an economic interest in the team. End quote. So that's really, really interesting. I really don't know what to make of this quite honestly, because I think that's been kind of interesting. I mean, there haven't really been too many new teams coming into Formula One in recent history. Obviously, we've seen the return of engine manufacturers such as Honda, for example. We saw Haas come back in, 2016 was their first year. But the point is, we've seen more teams leave Formula One than come into Formula One. And that's what I find fascinating about this whole deal, is that Aston Martin, obviously a very well-known, very luxurious car manufacturer. So to see that, like, an initial term of 10-year involvement in Formula One, I find that actually a little bit staggering. I mean, I find it hard to commit to anything in my own life and say, okay, I'm going to do this for 10 years. So that this is what absolutely fascinates me. But like I was saying, the deal between Red Bull and Aston Martin will, or an F1 anyways, will end with their Aston Martin's involvement as a works team in 2021. But they do have a separate deal between the two companies involving the Valkyrie hypercar. And that's going to continue until the cars start to get delivered. But then what I find, another side story to all of this is you're going to have this this really well-known mark come into racing, into Formula One, I should say. And, I don't think that they're going to be there just to be for the sake of it, right? You'd have to think that a manufacturer like Aston Martin would want to come and do something and have a positive presence and try and accomplish something in Formula One. So they have two drivers, obviously Perez and Lance Stroll, son of Lawrence. And I kind of really wonder, okay, well, what's the driver lineup going to look like in the future? I mean, Perez is a decent driver. I guess we never really know what maybe his true potential is, but I guess there's a reason why he's been at the Racing Point or Force India for such a long time, hasn't really necessarily moved up the ladder, despite having a lot of sponsorship money that he brings to the table. And then also equally interesting is when does that line get drawn between, having Lance in the team and, where is that cutoff of being good or not being good enough? And when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, Lawrence Stroll is a businessman, and of course, he's used his money and his influence to open a lot of doors for Lance, and I'm sure a lot of us would do the same for our own children. And but the big difference, of course, is not many of us have billions of dollars to throw around, or at least millions to help our children's racing careers and get them into Formula One. But the point is, we have to see now, like and that's going to be something really to look out for is if Lance doesn't continue to progress in Formula One, will that become a factor? Will that line, like say, get drawn in the sand, and perhaps at some point will he be moved on from the team and. Stay. Anyways, we'll keep an eye on that situation. So just sticking with that, Vijay Mallya, who was the former owner of the Force India team, which is now Racing Point after he was, he's had those charges about corruption and all that back in India. And then the team was really in dire straits. They went into receivership and then Lawrence Stroll came in with his consortium in the summer of 2018 and has taken over. I mean, last year was a kind of a little bit in between kind of year, but what I thought was really interesting was back in 2018 was that for the longest time, what I always found fairly impressive about Force India was, for me, I found that they were one of those teams, despite having very meager meager in terms of Formula One resources and funds and all those sorts of things that they can invest in to the team, that I always felt that they seem to be fairly they seem to do things rather smartly. I think they had to show a lot of ingenuity. I always found that they tended to punch above their weight a little bit. I mean, obviously they weren't out there winning races or anything like that, but I always found that they did more than with what they had than you might expect. And I thought they've always been a decent team. And on occasion when conditions were right, they had some good results here and there. Anyway, so that the first half of 2018, when they were really sort of struggling, I mean, everything with Mallya was kind of up in the air with his legal troubles and all these sorts of things. And they were really struggling on the track too. But when Stroll came in with his group and they took over the team, then injected some money into them, you certainly noticed a difference at the end of 2018 compared to the first half of the season before the summer break or until that deal was made. And I think it did help salvage something of that year for them. Last year was kind of an in-between year. And it wasn't really too impressive now, was it? But anyways, Mallya, he was very, very positive about it. And he said, quote, "I am delighted for Lawrence and I'm delighted for the team. To ultimately become a works team was always a dream. Lawrence and I are friends. And in fact, I congratulated him this morning on the news. He's a very astute investor and his track record proves that. If you look at the share price of Aston Martin today, he's obviously made a sweetheart deal. Under his chairmanship with the new range of models that Aston is planning, there's only one way to go, and that's north. For Racing Point, it is absolutely fabulous and will become a works team with support from a great British mark like Aston with all its heritage. Aston has plenty of followers and they will become Racing Point followers as well," end quote. Anyways, that's actually kind of interesting because there's a bit of a tie in there. Apparently back as early as 2015, Mallya was trying to secure sponsorship from Aston Martin, but eventually they went to Red Bull Racing instead. So we'll keep an eye on that. So kind of an interesting follow-up from last year. So I guess one of the big stories at the moment that I'm keeping an eye on is obviously this year we're going to have a very, very packed schedule in the World Championship with 22 races, I guess it is this year. But the big problem is now is in April is the Chinese Grand Prix in Shanghai, and of course we have the health crisis with this coronavirus in Wuhan, and the whole city's under lockdown, and it's obviously spread beyond the city limits of Wuhan and to different parts of the world. I mean, here in Vancouver. In southwestern BC, there have been several cases confirmed from people that come from the region. So it's a big problem, obviously. There's health implications, and everybody's working very hard to contain it and make sure it doesn't spread any further. But, I mean, thousands and thousands of people have fallen ill. You know, several hundred have already died, which is, you know, quite frightening. And so, I mean, this obviously has to take precedence and it has to be the priority. But the big question is now, at least from Formula One, is what do we do? Like, what do they do because the Chinese Grand Prix is now scheduled for April 19th. I mean, it always comes, or at least in recent years, it comes earlier in the year. And, well, I mean, the thing is that one way or another, sports always tends to push ahead, right? I mean, we're used to things like rain delays with NASCAR or baseball. I mean, football. I mean, one of the things I love about football at the end of the year or into the playoffs is, you know, you get to some of these crazy places or crazy games in places like Green Bay at Lambeau Field, or in Denver. You know, I love the unpredictability of watching a football game that's played in really crazy weather conditions like that. But I mean, when it comes to something else as serious as a virus and the potential that the damage of something like the coronavirus could do, I mean, obviously that's completely different. This isn't like a rain shower that's going to pass. And, you know, once conditions brighten up and it's safe to start playing again. And well, I mean, it's not a baseball game, right? I mean, this is something really serious when it comes to people's health. Is when are they going to have to make that call as to whether or not this Grand Prix goes ahead? And then with the schedule as packed as it is this year, if it was canceled, I mean, how would they be able to reschedule that? That is, you know, what I find really, I think, is a $64,000 question. I mean, obviously, safety of people in the racing community and well, everywhere, not just in the Formula One community, but people's health and lives in general just has to take precedence, but or take priority, I should say. And just making that call, because the airlines have stopped flying to China. Governments, Canada's sent a couple of charter planes over to China to repatriate citizens, and I guess they're going to be in quarantine the people that are from there. So, you know, and also internally, I mean, they put in travel restrictions inside of China. So, I mean, the Grand Prix is still over 2 months away, and hopefully by that time, this whole coronavirus thing has peaked and it's starting to peter out. But I mean, I'm not a virologist, if that's even a thing, or whatever it is. I'm not very smart in these kind of areas. But anyways, who's to know the forecasting and the modeling of the predictions that they're making for this virus? Well, you know, when will it sort of run its course? And if so, how is that going to impact something in that case, which is actually kind of trivial, despite the amount of money that gets put into it, is that when it comes to people's lives, Formula One isn't really all that important, is it, when it comes to the bigger picture? So that is the big question right now, is when it comes to that, when are they going to have to make that call? And if they decide that the Chinese Grand Prix can't go ahead, will they reschedule it for the later in the year? Can they reschedule it later in the year? Or is it just going to be something that has to get cut from the calendar and we just go back to only 21 Grand Prix for the season? Anyways, one to watch and see what happens as the days and weeks go by. But certainly, hopefully, the situation regarding the virus is solved sooner rather than later. Anyways, on that gloomy note, it's time for a very quick break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right. Well, welcome back to the show. So, well, lots of things to talk about, and it's actually pretty cool. I mean, I was saying just off the top of the show that we do have quite a lot of news that's going around, and one of the interesting things is that, like I said, like I'd lost track of the calendar and the way that things have been going lately, just in my own crazy life. But it is kind of cool to see that some of the cars. Well, I mean, we've seen some of the different teams firing up their cars over the past several days, but Haas has released pictures of the VF20, and it's actually quite a nice looking car. They've gone away from that black and gold livery that they had last year, but I mean that was tied into that bizarre sponsorship deal that they had with that energy drinks company, Rich Energy or whatever it was. I mean, look, you know, don't get me wrong, I thought the paint scheme that they had on the car was. It was stunning. I loved it. I thought it looked great. I mean, it looks like those old John Player special black and gold Lotus cars from the 1970s, I guess the early 1980s. I mean, probably before, well, it's before my time. I mean, I was very, very little at the time, but certainly before the time I remember really watching Formula One. But this year, they're going with a black and white paint scheme, and it looks really good. And on the radiators, Haas in nice bright red letters, or sort of maybe a day glow orange, a little bit kind of hard to tell from the picture, but very, very sharp. So it really, I think, is really whets the appetite, you know, when you see the first pictures coming out. And Romain Grosjean and Kevin Magnussen are going to be the two drivers again this year. I can see Magnussen, but Grosjean, you know, at least in my opinion, I think he's had enough kicks at the can already, and I'm kind of surprised that that he's going to be back. But I suppose I'm not the only one on that front. But hey, not here to throw shade at Romain Grosjean. Anyways, they're really hoping that they're going to be able to bounce back and have a good year. That's exactly the words that they used, was bounce back, because 2019 was a very, very disappointing season for them. And honestly, as a Formula One fan in North America, I think it's vitally important to have an American team in Formula One. And moreover, I think that team has to be competitive. So it's been, I think, to be expected that they wouldn't come in and obviously be a top team right away. But I think that we've seen them struggle a little bit. And last year was, it wasn't very good. I mean, they did introduce an upgrade at the Spanish Grand Prix, and it didn't really deliver the big performance upgrade and the big step forward that they were really hoping for. And plus, I mean, it was a tough year for them. I mean, that Spanish Grand Prix, I think, was probably more remembered for Romain Grosjean and the troubles that he had with his teammate, Kevin Magnussen. Anyways, Grosjean said earlier this week that the team was really going to put all their efforts into getting this car right for this season, and really understand what the car is and what it's all about as soon as they could in the season. So anyways, Grosjean had to say, quote, "We are not making a presentation. We're just launching. We're going to concentrate on the essentials and really get the best out of the car as quickly as possible. We're waiting to see how the car is on the track. We have all the numbers from the wind tunnel. I think we've learned a lot from last year. Now, again, the only answer we're really going to get is when we run the car and see how it performs on the track." So yeah, you can imagine that you've got all this wind tunnel data. You've got all this data that you have from the, you know, the computer modeling and all that. But the proof is in the pudding. Like, it really depends, you know, did the theory work out into reality? And when this car actually gets out of the garage onto a racetrack, is it going to handle? Is it going to perform the way that they expect, or is it not? But sticking with that line of thought, Gene Haas, the team owner of Haas F1, said earlier this week that he hopes that the VF20 is going to help the team bounce back to form after what he called a real education process throughout 2019. And, it was difficult, was it? I mean, they struggled with the car basically from Spain onwards. Anyways, Haas had to say, quote, "I'm pleased to see the car return with the more familiar Haas automation colors, so the black, white, and the red. It's certainly a livery that people identify with. Frankly, I'm hoping the VF20 will return us the kind of form we ran in 2018 when we finished fifth in the Constructors' Championship. 2019 was a tough season to endure. We've been through a real education process, one that comes to all Formula One teams at some stage. I'm trusting we've learned enough from those lessons and have applied that knowledge into making the VF20 a more competitive entry. It's important to me that we're back in the mix and consistently scoring points. We certainly have the capability, and we've proved as an organization we can do it, end quote. So yeah, it was a long way for them to kind of fall last year, not competitive at all after having a decent season out in 2018. So if you're hoping that maybe this is the year that Mercedes is not going to pull things off and dominate Formula One again, maybe you'll be a little bit encouraged, I guess is the right word to use at this news. And that is that they have been fighting what they call a few little issues with their 2020 power unit for the W11. Anyways, Andy Cowell, the Mercedes engine boss, had to say, quote, lots going on at Brixworth, lots of improvement across the whole power unit on the ERS side, on the internal combustion engine side, as ever fighting with a few little issues as we pull everything together. So lots of work going into building the right spec, getting it long runs, then providing the power units to the team so they can fire up their cars. I think you've spotted ones that's fired up already. I think he's referring to Williams. Anyways, going on, Cowell has to say, and then getting the hardware ready to get track testing. Car launch on February 14th with a red rose, and then off to Barcelona with three cars, hopefully pounding around the track. Just 6 days of track testing before we're off to Melbourne, end quote. Well, you know, I think that may be a little bit of a red herring. And as I've said repeatedly, not just in recent weeks, but over the years, that until proven otherwise, I'm just not going to expect to see Mercedes not get it done. I mean, whenever these guys have had issues in the past with the car, they just they have this army of extremely talented people in that team in all areas, and when they have something to address and deal with it, they seem to get it sorted out. So until I'm proven wrong in that, I just find it hard to bet against them that they won't find a solution. And as Cowell was saying just there, that they are only fighting with a few little issues. So to me, that just seems like the last few little tweaks and little bugs that they just need to iron out. And really, I mean, how many times have we seen Mercedes engines fail over the past several years or not deliver the goods? I mean, that combination of a Mercedes engine in a Mercedes car has just been unbelievable. And just the amount of races that these guys have won over the years in the V6 turbo hybrid era is absolutely mind-boggling. And like I say, I mean, they literally do have an army of talented people there, both on and off the track, that they just, you know, they just can't lose, can they? Anyways, moving along and sticking with the theme of car launches and engine fire-ups and things like that, Williams has announced a date for what they are having as a digital-only launch for their F1 car this year, which is going to be the FW43. And that's going to be at 8 a.m. GMT on February 17th, which is 2 days before winter testing kicks off in Barcelona. And, well, that's kind of interesting, isn't it? They're actually sharing the date with Racing Point, but they're having their, I believe they're having their launch event in Austria, if I remember correctly. But anyways, Williams' car is going to be just a digital only. And well, what they did last year is they unveiled some revised delivery as early as the February 11th. But the car was delayed, and well, it was just embarrassing because they ended up missing the first two full days of testing in Barcelona because they just weren't ready to go. And well, I mean, it just never got it together last year. I mean, they showed up late for winter testing, and it was just an absolutely rotten year for them. But you know, it is kind of interesting from my point of view that they decide to do a digital only launch. But again, maybe that's not such a bad thing. I mean, we all tend to associate kind of like glitz and glamour and fancy launches and things like that in Formula One. But I don't. As much as I thought at first that, oh, that's very un F1 and maybe that's not the way to go for Williams, but I mean, whatever. I mean, I think when it comes down to it, I think that the less that they do to maybe distract from the effort that they're putting into the car itself and focusing on just getting that right, I don't necessarily think that this is a bad move. If they can put their effort and their attention into getting the car right and getting it on the track and getting all those miles in during winter testing that they need to, then hopefully they can start to make some positive steps forward. Because I mean, I'm repeating myself. It's been repeating myself ad nauseum almost, but it really has been extremely painful to watch these guys slide down through the order and down all the way into the basement, where they're not only the slowest team, but I mean, they are slowest by a good margin. I mean, it seems that that the Williams cars last year were being passed only several laps into the race. I mean, I'm probably exaggerating here, but the point is that they really were bad. So I think that if they can just focus that energy into the car and get the car right and just make any positive progress forward, I mean, that's, I think, for me, what makes McLaren such, well, I mean, they're not back at the top winning races or challenging for podiums, but last year was the very first, I'd say, really positive season that they had. I mean, they're little incremental moves, steps forward after the dark days after they had the Honda engines in the car several years ago. And last year was really, really a positive year for them. And I'm sure that Williams would love to be in that that same position that the McLaren was last year. But I think at this point that as long as you can turn the tide and get something positive going and just get away from the back of the pack there, and even if you're fighting other backmarkers, that would be positive progress. I mean, we are 2.5 seconds off the pace or whatever it was. I mean, that is such a huge margin in Formula One. And honestly, I'm kind of surprised at times that, I guess they're obligated to show up, but it's certainly the morale inside of that team must have been something, it must have been a pretty tough place to be last year. Anyways, time for another break here on the Overtime Media Network. Don't go away. We'll be right back in just one moment.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All right, well, welcome back to the show. Just going to stick with Williams here for just a couple of minutes more. And not only did they announce the digital-only launch of their car earlier this week, but they also released some imagery and some footage of their first engine fire-up of the year. So that's good to see. It's the first. Well, I think it's a big deal for them. I mean, considering that last year, like I was saying before the break, that they didn't show up to winter testing on time, and later in the year they had to they parted ways with Paddy Lowe. I mean, I think we kind of expected that he maybe not going to be the a savior of the team, but I didn't expect them to go backwards under his guidance. I thought that was a good move when he went from Mercedes to Williams. I'm sure that they felt that he was the guy that they needed to lead the team and the design and everything like that. And I don't think that they expected to go where they were at that time, you know, basically the best of the rest, definitely a top half team down to the complete bottom. But the thing is, like I was saying too, that, you know, if they're going to have this digital only launch, you know, get away from that, all the efforts and everything that goes into planning a big event like a Formula One car launch, and just concentrate on the car, I think that's great. And also, I think it's good too that that they have released footage on Tuesday of this week of the FW43 being fired up in the factory for the very first time in front of team members, and Sir Frank Williams was also there. And I think just from the just from a, I think just the, even the optics of it, the, after a disastrous and disorganized off season and winter testing last year, that, that they're one of the first teams that have released footage of the car being fired up, like McLaren and Mercedes did last week, I think has to be a bit of a feel good moment for them. I mean, sure, they might be a privateer, but I mean, they still have a very healthy budget, and you would expect with the resources and the knowledge that that team has with all the championships that they've won over the years, that, that they shouldn't be able to get this thing figured out in one way or another. And like I say, I just think it's good for them to actually get out in front of them, be one of the teams that that are actually you know, showing these things or getting the car going and sooner rather than later. And let's hope they can turn it around. Maybe they can be the McLaren of 2020. We'll wait and see. Anyways, talking now about Red Bull, and they've changed their philosophy in what they hope to avoid a slow start to the season. And I think this is interesting because the margin in Formula One, if you get behind, is just so big. And if you get it wrong a couple of races, or maybe even one race, if you really have a bad outing, is really what it takes to really open up a big gap between those and yourself and those that you're racing against. But certainly you can't afford to do that over several races. I mean, I was talking about it last week on the show, just about how Fernando Alonso was saying that Lewis Hamilton starts slow to the season. And the only time that when I went back and looked at all the numbers since 2014, the only time he had an out and out really, really slow start to the season was in 2016, when he got so far behind Nico Rosberg. At one point, it was, 44 point gap after the first four or five races. And that was just a monumental hole for Lewis to dig himself out of. And I mean, Lewis being Lewis Hamilton, of course, he had the car and he's got himself and all the talents and skills that he has. So, I mean, he was able to close that gap and still be in contention for the world championship. I mean, it just made those margins that much smaller, because for me, when his world championship season was, it wasn't over, but it certainly was, it became all the more difficult after he had that engine failure in Malaysia. And that was just one of those moments there that even though he was still able to get the points and close the gap between Rosberg, because I mean, he only lost the world championship in 2016 by a mere 5 points by the time it was over and done after the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, was just due to the fact of the combination of just having such that big gap open up between himself and Nico so early in the season. And then have that engine failure in Malaysia. I mean, like, how often do we see a Mercedes engine let go like that? I mean, not very often. I mean, they are about as reliable as they come out there. So that was something else. But the thing was, at that point, the margin, the room that he had to be able to lose points was virtually nil. And that's why when you go back and look at that season, to a certain extent, you can say, yeah, Malaysia is pretty much where the dream pretty much ended that year. Because after that, I mean, Rosberg was just, he was just going around, I wouldn't say on autopilot for those last several races. He just played it really conservative and just got the points that he needed without unnecessarily taking too many risks or pushing the car or himself too hard. And I guess that is kind of the luxury that he had based on the amount of points that he'd built up over the entire season. But anyways, Red Bull, the point is, like I say, I mean, if you let that gap open too much too soon, then it's virtually impossible to close it, especially at the top of the order there. Anyways, Red Bull said that they're changing their philosophy on how they prepare for the Formula One season so that they can try and avoid the slow start to the year that they've had that have proved costly in the World Championship in previous years. Anyways, team principal Christian Horner had to say, quote, "I think there have been factors in recent years, like an engine transition or a front wing change last year. This year, we've changed our philosophy as well going into this year, being really earlier. With the stability of regulations, it is obvious the RB16 is very much an upgrade and an evolution of the RB15. It's focused on addressing some of its weak spots and building on its strengths. I think that with that continuity, the team is really eager to go toe-to-toe with particularly Mercedes and take that challenge to them, because it is on those days that teamwork really counts, whether it is world record pit stops, whether it's getting the strategy right, or of course, reliability, end quote. Well, yeah, I mean, the Red Bull, I think that's some of their strengths that they've had over the past couple of years, is even though that the car may not have been quite on the same level as Ferrari, and definitely not always on the same level as Mercedes, I mean, who really has, that they do other things good in other ways, that they've been able to make up for some of the deficiencies maybe that they've had in their strategy. I mean, their pit stops are always pretty solid, and they always seem to be pretty bold to try different things. I mean, they are kind of the kings of the double stack pit stop, and they really look to try and exploit any advantage that they can. And I think that is something that we're really going to have to take a close look at, is that with the regulations frozen for this year, that there is no big change coming in, right? So, I mean, it is going to be basically an evolution on the cars from last year. So it's going to be really kind of interesting to see how each of the teams, especially Ferrari, Mercedes, and Red Bull, have taken their cars from last year and how many changes that they've made. I mean, if this is basically a development on last year's cars. Okay, well, what do Mercedes need to improve on? Well, not really a lot, do they? I mean, their cars are always pretty darn good. But the Red Bull certainly was a very good car at different times in the years, but they, like Horner was saying, that they need to get the car going. They need to be competitive earlier in the year. So can they get it figured out before we get racing in Melbourne next month? That's going to be something to watch. And of course, Ferrari kind of finished the season on a, I guess, a bit of a whimper, you could say. I mean, they looked really good after the summer break. I mean, they looked pretty strong there. Of course, there was all these accusations and speculation over the legality of their engine, which they insist was legal all year long, despite some of the different things that were said by different people, specifically Max Verstappen, who called them outright cheaters, just to paraphrase his comments. So yeah, it is really going to be interesting to see that, but I really wonder though if Red Bull are able to do or get their ducks all lined up and are able to really have a strong start, whether or not they can take the fight to Mercedes right off the top of the season. I mean, that's really what wrapped up the world championship, both for the drivers and the constructors last year, was that they were basically untouchable until we got to Austria at the beginning of the summer. By that time, I mean, they just really amassed a lead that was too big to tackle. It didn't matter if it was in the drivers' championship or the constructors. At that point, I mean, the lead was almost unassailable. I mean, it was just a question of when, not if they're going to win the double world championship again. And that's exactly what happened. And certainly, it would make things a lot more interesting if Ferrari and Red Bull are able to be more competitive and take the fight to Mercedes earlier in the year. I mean, I think that's the one complaint that I've had about Mercedes all this time, is it's not that they win the world championship and the driver's championship every year. It's just that nobody has been able to really consistently get up there and fight them one-on-one for an entire year. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, they have the best car, and they've had some pretty damn good drivers driving them. Obviously, Lewis is one of the best, best of all time, and obviously one of the best, the best driver of this generation. But still, the challenges that have come from other teams, specifically Ferrari, have just been sporadic. They've never been able to stretch it out over the entire season. I mean, 2018, they should have won that championship. I really feel like they could have done that. It was just, unfortunately, they were not able to keep it up over the entire year. And after Spa, when the Vettel won that race, they looked really good. And then you go to Monza, and then that's where he really started to go down and really lost his mojo. And he had that collision with Lewis Hamilton, and then really struggled after that. And then that's where Mercedes really gained their momentum, built up a head of steam at the end of that season. So Anyways, that is the key. Just to make a long story short, is don't let Mercedes get off to that really quick start. Fight them one on one, and hey, if they after a long, hard, close fight, they still win, I have no problem with that. It's just like I say, I really wish we could have seen other teams take the fight to them more often, more consistently, and really make them work for it. Anyways, time for one final break here on the podcast this week. Don't go away. We'll be right back. All right, well, sticking with Red Bull, just as we start to close the showdown for this week, Max Verstappen said that the decision to renew with Red Bull for a new contract until 2023 was to avoid what he called awkwardness. Anyways, Max had to say, quote, "I think I felt very comfortable in the team. I never really wanted to rush anything because there was no need. I also think it went very quickly. Last year, I never really thought about it too much. I think it is a good thing because it takes away any doubt. There are no question marks anymore. I think when you go into a season when your contract is up at the end of the year, at one point it is going to maybe be a bit awkward towards the next car, you know, the year after. I didn't want to have any of that, and for me, this is the right place. I really feel good in the team, and there are a lot of good people in the team, and I also see the motivation, the hunger to fight for victories and championship." So, yeah, I mean, the thing is, Max, I mean, this is his team. And I think that's obviously one of the reasons why Danny Ricciardo decided to leave and go to Renault. I mean, the writing was on the wall. They may not have really come out and said publicly that Max was the number one guy. But I think that obviously when you're inside the team, you're inside the garage or you're in the factory, whatever, that you could just tell when where all the energy is going. And I mean, that's fair. I mean, Max is a very, very good Formula One driver. I mean, he has all the characteristics, and it looks like this guy has everything that he needs to become a world championship at one point if given the right car. And you can also understand too, I mean, none of us want any uncertainty in life. And I mean, it's a little bit different in professional sports where you're kind of going from contract to contract. It's not like most of us get up and go to our jobs each and every day and know unless we screw things up royally or we get a better offer from somewhere else that we can basically stay in a job for as long as we want until hopefully we get to walk away on our own terms and at our own choice. Anyways, you know, careers being shorter in Formula One and sports in general, you can imagine that knowing that you're going into a contract year, even if you don't have a deal done at the end of the year, I can see that totally weighing on somebody's mind, and whether or not that actually comes into play at the, you know, during a race, I guess that maybe has to do or is up to a little bit to each individual driver and each just how each of those people, you know, are mentally, I guess, how you deal with the different kinds of stress. But I could see that certainly from Max's point of view, knowing that he's going into the last year of a contract and just, you know, getting it out of the way, just everything's set and you can just concentrate on getting out there and go racing and just know, okay, well, I can maybe put this on a back burner now for a couple of months, and maybe we can revisit this in the summer or whatever it might be, but it's still going to be a bit of a distraction at one point or another. Anyways, Christian Horner had to say, quote, "Everybody knows what the future is. There are no awkward conversations between the driver and the team. He knows exactly what his role is. We're all in it very much together as one unit, as one team," end quote. So yeah, I think that was really the big question, but I think it's sort of interesting as well, and I wonder if maybe there's just a little bit of Christian Horner showing his cards a little bit, because there was all this speculation before Christmas. Okay, well, what's going to happen for 2021? Charles doesn't have a contract. Neither does Vettel. Neither does Hamilton, Bottas, and Max Verstappen. Who's going to go where? And Horner even said at that time, and perhaps they were already having these discussions with Max at the time, and knew that deal was going to go ahead or go through with the new deal to keep Max there for the long term. And he said that he felt that the status quo with those top five guys would pretty much be exactly the same by the time it's all said and done. And so far, he's been proven right, hasn't he? I mean, the first one to go was Charles and Max. And then the big ones are going to be Hamilton, Vettel, and Bottas. And I think that they've all basically got their got their wishes where they want to go. And I did think it was interesting a couple of weeks ago when we had the round table that Tim Haraney from TSN, the sports network here in Canada, said that in all the conversations and all the understanding that that he has is that Ferrari is very keen to keep Sebastian Vettel in the team for 2021. So that that'll be another one to watch. And I think that Seb just needs to get his confidence back, get his mojo back. I mean, he's had a rough year and a half, I mean, ever since the second half of the 2018 season. But I don't think you become a bad driver overnight. I just think that last year's car, I really don't think that it really suited his style. I mean, look at that spin that he had at Monza. That just, car just didn't do what he thought it was going to do. Same with that little moment that he had in Montreal, which ultimately cost him the race, and because he got the 5 second penalty, time penalty added on at the end of the race, which cost him the victory and handed it to Lewis Hamilton. That just looked like a guy that is trying to push the car to the limit and just didn't do what he wanted it or needed to do. You can throw Bahrain in there as well, and any other number of examples. But Mattia Binotto, team principal at Ferrari, was saying last week that despite all the negative incidents aside, that they're happy with the pairing of Leclerc and Vettel. So, just going back though to the driver market for 2021, the one guy that I think is kind of interesting is out of those three that are left, out of Hamilton, Bottas, and Vettel. Obviously, Vettel is an interesting one. Whether or not he's going to stay with the Ferrari and potentially Hamilton moving to Ferrari, but I think for me is Valtteri Bottas. Are they going to be content with keeping him in the team? I mean, obviously he's been able to win some races. Doesn't really challenge Lewis too much in the championship, and there's no ill feeling or any bad moments between him and Lewis like there was with Nico Rosberg. But still, at some point you got to wonder, are they going to be content with that in the long run? Are they going to want to put somebody else in the car, maybe like one of their own younger drivers? Because I mean, at some point, do they want just a guy that's going to go out there and just score points on a consistent basis, or are they going to look at maybe some different talent, younger talent, to put in the car? Because you just think that anybody that's a decent, consistent driver should be able to rack up points pretty consistently. And that's my big question, is whether or not they would want to stick with Bottas to do that after 2020. Anyway, just one of a lot of different things and different scenarios that are kind of going through my head for next year and the drivers. Anyways, this is an interesting quote, and I've purposely held this one towards the end. And you can always trust Max to say something interesting, have a good sound bite here or there. And he said that Hamilton is good, but not God. And I don't know, is he kind of talking a little bit of trash? Is he kind of trying to poke the bear a little bit? I'd love to see these two go at it a little bit more, head to head on the track. Verstappen had this to say during a Red Bull media event in London this week, and he was talking about Lewis Hamilton as being one of his main rivals. Verstappen said that things would be very different if Red Bull can start putting pressure on Hamilton. And he said, quote, "It's very car dependent, of course, in F1. At least when you can put pressure on them, it is a lot harder for the guy. If you never really have pressure, then you can always drive it with 97-98% and you never make mistakes or just have one bad weekend of 21 or 22. So even if we start within 0.2, you can really mount the pressure. And of course, I would like to start straight away, because then it's really on. Lewis is very good. He's definitely one of the best, but he's not God. Maybe God is with him, but he's not God." So kind of a funny quote, but I think that he does make a good point there. And he nails it, because he said, if you never really have pressure, you can always drive it with 97-98%. You never make mistakes, which Lewis Hamilton never makes mistakes, does he? I mean, to see Lewis make a mistake is it's almost non-existent, right? And that is the other thing, is he just doesn't have the pressure. The only guy that was ever really able to pressure him on a bit of a regular or semi-regular basis was Nico Rosberg. And I think even he was pushing it to the absolute extreme, because he really, I think, had to make some desperate moves at different times to try and stay ahead of Lewis. Look at Spa, look at Spain, look at Austria, look at any one of those moments. And well, I mean, Spain was a bit ridiculous. I mean, you saw Lewis coming up the inside of the track, going to turn three, close the door, the two collide and slide off into the gravel. I mean, the thing was, that was a bit ridiculous, because I mean, Lewis would have gotten him sooner or later anyways. I mean, all he was doing was just, I mean, he just closed the door and slammed the door shut and just took off, you know, basically went over the front of Hamilton's car, and they both crashed out as a result. I mean, the thing was, I mean, even if he had just, say, really cut him off badly, Lewis had to put the brakes on, he would have gotten him eventually that race. I mean, it was really desperation. I mean, the same with the collision that they had in Austria that year, I believe it was as well, that it was just more desperation, that incident Spa. So that, but I mean, apart from that, I mean, Bottas doesn't really push him, and within the team, and then the challenges that come from outside of the team, say from Red Bull, from Verstappen, or from the Ferraris, it's not always on a consistent basis. I mean, it has at different times, but it's never really been prolonged over an entire year. So just like Max says, somebody's got to really get on it from the start of the year and really push Lewis Hamilton to the max, and Mercedes as well. And I think that would really make for an enjoyable world championship. I'd love to see more parity between those top three teams and those top six drivers. And well, maybe it's a little bit wishful thinking, but it really, I think, would make Formula One a little bit more enjoyable to watch. Anyways, we'll wait and see what happens. Anyways, Danny Ricciardo says that the Netflix documentary Drive to Survive put the Formula One on the map in the United States. So that's kind of interesting for what he had to say. Anyhow, Ricciardo had to say, quote, "I definitely feel F1 is becoming much more of a thing here in the States. Drive to Survive put it on the map. I spend a bit of time in the States, and up until a year ago, not really anyone would say hi to me, not in a bad way, but they wouldn't recognize me for being an F1 driver. And now it's all, hey, we saw you on Netflix. It was great, Drive to Survive. We wear helmets, so it's not really many people can see our faces a lot of the time. So putting a face to a name, that helped." And yeah, that's why I think that it was a really a great move for them to go out there and do it. I mean, like I say, I mean, one of my beefs with the season number one was the fact that Ferrari and Mercedes didn't sign up, and anything that you saw from any of those guys, be it Bottas, Hamilton, Raikkonen, or Vettel, was all stock footage. So I mean, they were probably little sound bites we'd all seen from different news or press conferences throughout the entire year. Whereas it was pretty interesting to see some of the behind the scenes things with like Red Bull. There was that episode that they did on science, all these different storylines. So, I mean, as disappointing as maybe it was that they weren't in it, I think that the creators of the series still did a very good job with the other eight teams, all the other drivers that were still in there, and were able to still craft the story in a bit of a non-linear way, because it wasn't like, okay, we start from Australia, go all the way to Abu Dhabi. They kind of hopped around a little bit, and it really worked. And certainly the Ricciardo and the at Red Bull situation, that's something that featured quite a bit, and I thought it was really interesting. A lot of the different storylines that we picked up on throughout the years, be it either through the news or what happened on the track, and or you know, just kind of put it all together through that and social media, because I mean, it really is a very varied layered experience in Formula One. So, but it was pretty cool. But you know, it is good too, and I think that's one of the things that it really doesn't get a lot of coverage, and I think that's why the USA is really, I think, an untapped market at this point for them. I mean, which seems kind of insane, because I mean, the USA is obviously a country that, I mean, to me, like car culture in the United States, it really goes hand in hand, right? And I think that's one of the problems that that Formula One has had, that they've never really gone out there in the past and really promoted themselves. And I mean, everybody watches Netflix or something similar in this day and age. And that's why I thought it worked really well for them to get out there and do that. I mean, I'm sure a lot of people that aren't even Formula One fans probably saw that and started watching it and maybe got to learn a little bit or learn a little bit more about Formula One, even if they didn't watch the whole series. So yeah, I mean, I'd love to see more about it, or more people talking about it over here, and come up more in the consciousness, because I think a lot of people in North America, for example, know who Lewis Hamilton is, but I think it's more that they know him because he's famous. He's just famous for being famous, and they might know, oh yeah, I think he's like a racing driver or something like that. So anyways, kind of cool. And yeah, season two is coming out in just a couple of weeks, so really looking forward to that, especially, like I say, with all the teams involved, all the drivers, really looking forward to see what they got coming for us down the pipe here. Anyways, just a couple more items here before we shut it down. One of them is just looking towards 2021 and the new 18-inch tires that Pirelli is bringing in. And Mario Sola, who's the boss over there, says that there's no going back to the existing 13-inch tires, even if the teams are unhappy with the 18-inch tires that they're going to be producing for next year. So those 18-inch wheels, those are going to be one of the big parts of the major rules change for next year. And I mean, the car's really going to look a lot different. So really looking forward to seeing how that's going to turn out. But anyways, Sola had to say, quote, the first feedback from the 18-inch tires is quite good, so I'm not expecting to have any kind of surprise this year. Obviously, the car will be different in 2021. The car is designed on 18-inch tires, so in 21 we will have a new product. No chance to go back to the 13-inch tires. But I'm positive, especially in the first session when we were in Paul Ricard with Renault last September, we did 213 laps in 2 days. With the Mule car, the first time the team is running a new car, the first time we are running an 18-inch tire, new rims, new everything, you expect to have an issue and maybe usually have to stop for half a day or maybe more. But we had no issues at all. We did our run plan in the 2 days. We ran more than 1,000 kilometers, so it was quite a productive 2 days test. So again, we'll wait and see what happens when it actually comes in 2021. But it really is going to be quite unprecedented, I think, to see when all this actually comes into reality next year. And we'll see whether or not all these changes and all these ideas that they've had to make racing competitive and get the cars closer together, if they can actually pull it off and make it a reality. So, hey, that doesn't mean we're going to enjoy the season any less. It's just that even though I'm looking forward to this year, I'm very, very curious and quite looking forward to 2021 as well. Not that I want to rush a year ahead unnecessarily quickly, but I guess we just all have to wait and be patient. Anyways, finally now, ex-Caterham boss Tony Fernandez has denied any wrongdoing in relation to a bribery scandal involving aircraft producer Airbus. So AirAsia is a company that was co-founded and run by Fernandez and is one of several airlines named in a case which was brought against Airbus by the UK Serious Fraud Office. Well, this is kind of an interesting one. A worldwide investigation was shared between British, US, and French authorities, and with the Serious Fraud Office taking responsibility for Malaysia, Sri Lanka, Taiwan, Indonesia, and Ghana. So, wow, I mean, they're really running the gamut there. Anyways, it has resulted in Airbus facing over 3.5 billion euros, so a lot of money, in fines and penalties via settlement agreements. And there's a sponsorship deal between Airbus and Caterham, as alleged to have influenced AirAsia's decision to order the company's airplanes, because they were a sponsor of the Caterham team in Formula a couple of years ago. So I guess when did they wrap up now? I mean, they basically went out with a bit of whimper in Formula One. Remember they didn't show up for the couple of races there. What was the end of 2014 or 2015? There, thereabouts. I mean, they've been gone for several years now. And they actually did that unprecedented thing where they actually had a crowdfunding campaign going to raise enough money to get the team to the last couple of races of the year, which they actually were successful in doing. I think I even put in like 15 or 20 bucks. I got like a lapel pin out of it or something like that for the amount of money that I donated. I can't remember. I think it was like 25 bucks now that I think about it. Anyways, it says refuel caterum or something like that, or emission refuel caterum, something in the team colors. Anyways, details of the case were revealed in documents last week by Dame Victoria Sharp, which is the president of the Queen's Bench Division of the Royal Courts of Justice. And boy, is that a mouthful. Anyways, she had to write, quote, "The first count alleges that contrary to Section 7 of the Bribery Act 2010, between 1 July 2011 and 1 June 2015, Airbus SE failed to prevent persons associated with Airbus SE from bribing others concerned with the purchase of aircraft by AirAsia and AirAsia X Airlines from Airbus. Namely, directors and or employees of AirAsia Airlines, where said bribery was intended to obtain or retain business or advantage in the conduct of business for Airbus SE." Anyways, she went on to mention Caterham specifically, quote, "The improper payment consisted of $50 million, and Airbus employees also offered but did not pay an additional $55 million paid to its directors and or employees of AirAsia and AirAsia X Airlines as sponsorship for a sports team. The sports team was jointly owned by AirAsia Executive 1 and AirAsia Executive 2, but was largely unrelated to AirAsia and AirAsia X." Anyways, that's a bit of a mouthful. Anyways, in a statement last Monday, AirAsia said they vigorously reject and deny any and all allegations of wrongdoing. So, interesting. Kind of makes you wonder what goes on behind the scenes sometime, but kind of a funny story to pop up in the F1 news feed this week. Anyways, now it's time to wrap it up. It's been a bit of a long day here for me, and it's starting to get a little bit late. It's almost 11:30 p.m. here on Thursday night, so time to sit down and get this one processed and out so you guys can enjoy it. Anyways, thanks very much for listening. If you want to get in touch with me, easiest way is on Twitter at ScuderiaF1Pod or via email at ScuderiaF1. Oh, sorry, that's the wrong one. Email, I should know this by now. I've been only doing this a couple of years. Email is scuderiaf1pod@gmail.com. If you have any questions or comments or feedback, or you just want to say hi, just drop me a line. Love connecting with other Formula One fans all around the world. And that's it. That's a wrap. Well, like I say, we're getting very close to winter testing. Next week, we should have some car launches to talk about. So really looking forward to that. Anyways, until then, have a great weekend. And we'll talk to you again very soon. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Scuderia F1 podcast. If you want to get the show notes for this episode, then head over to ScuderiaF1Pod.com. Want to get in touch with us? Then email us at ScuderiaF1Pod@gmail.com.